From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines later this hour. And next hour, we'll get ready. The skeptic's cage to go in, one comes out. But the guests are darn serious about their views, so get ready for this one. Mediums, remote viewing, and psychic phenomena. That's what they'll be battling over. By the way, I will, at the end of this opening of my news here, address the very courageous hour of Art Bell last night before we get to our guest as well. And then, as I mentioned, we'll have open lines for you at about the halfway point this hour. Well, a breaking story in Canada. The Canadian Prime Minister there, Paul Martin, concedes election to Conservative Stephen Harper after 12 years of Liberal rule. It's a big change. Canada, as you know, decided that they did not want to endorse the Iraqi situation. And over a scandal, the Liberals have been tossed out. So Stephen Harper's Conservative group will take over in Canada. Also in Canada, a six-year-old cow from Alberta, from a farm there, has tested positive for mad cow disease. Dr. Brian Evans, Canada's chief veterinary officer, said the affected animal had not entered the human food or animal feed systems. Mad cow disease is a degenerative cattle nerve illness linked to the rare and fatal human nerve disorder, which you know as CJD. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns says that the United States will not cut off cattle shipments from Canada. Well, if you use a BlackBerry device to communicate with your friends, your family, and your office, this might all change for you. The Supreme Court has turned down a request to review a major patent infringement ruling against the maker of the BlackBerry email device. The High Court rejected a petition by Research in Motion to review a federal appeals court ruling that could lead to a shutdown of most U.S. BlackBerry sales and service here in the United States. Now, this case goes way back to 2002 when patent-holding company NTP successfully sued RIM, that's the company that had BlackBerry, in a lower court. It won an injunction in 2003 to halt U.S. sales of the BlackBerry and shut down its service. Now, although that ruling was stayed pending an appeal, RIM and NTP reached a tentative $450 million settlement on this dispute in March. Somehow the deal fell apart in June. RIM wants the lower court to enforce the agreement. So let's see what happens if Research in Motion doesn't come up with a $450 million. BlackBerry might just be shut down. Remember I always talk about follow the money trail? Well, what a strange story. Under the threat of sanctions over Iran's nuclear program, the Ayatollahs there and corporate heads in Iran, as well as the government, have begun transferring vast private fortunes out of secret accounts in Europe. The money is being spread out among dozens of banks around the world, including the Oil Emirates, Hong Kong, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Iran has a spiritual leader. He's the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He has transferred from his personal fortune from the Swiss bank UBS to banks in Singapore and Malaysia the sum of, get this, spiritual leader now, $1.2 billion. I have a feeling he might have his hands in Iran's cookie jar, the oil cookie jar. But that's what's happening. These people are taking their money and they're hiding it. I think they're afraid that their assets are going to get frozen. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says the time has come to send Iran before the UN Security Council over its disputed nuclear program, but she seemed to acknowledge that the punishment may not be swift or entirely to the United States' liking. Now, in a moment, we're going to check in with Jerry Corsi about all of this. I don't understand why the UN Security Council isn't doing anything on this and why the Atomic Energy Commission for the UN isn't doing anything about this. Everybody just seems to be stalling. That's a weird story all by itself. And Iran will immediately retaliate, they said, if referred to the UN Security Council next week by forging ahead with developing a full-scale, they say now, uranium enrichment program. The Defense Department here in the United States has scheduled a second major three-day exercise to combat and really fight nuclear terrorism in the Charleston, South Carolina area. The goal, they say, is not prevention, but coping with the catastrophic results of a terrorist nuclear attack on a major U.S. port. They are warning people not to be frightened. They just want you to know. They're encouraging you to learn from this event. The military's Joint Task Force, headquartered in Fort Monroe, Virginia, will host the three-day drill for commanders and representatives of other federal agencies that would be involved in managing the consequences of a 10-milliton nuclear blast, enough to inflict mass casualties and devastation on an American city. Like last summer's exercise, it is centered around a hypothetical blast that affects nearly 500,000 people across a 900-square-mile section of Tidewater near South Carolina. The scenario assumes 10,000 fatalities and 30,000 people injured. Now, on the heels of Osama bin Laden last week coming public, saying that, you know, they're in the planning stages, this is strange, too. Well, psychic Sylvia Brown finally called one, didn't she? Too bad the people in the Balkans couldn't have heard her on Coast to Coast. She talked about avoiding trains. At least 39 people have died after a passenger train in the Balkans plunged into a ravine, at least 135 people injured. And a sad sign of the times, I'm afraid, and I never thought I would see this, but the Ford Motor Company will cut 25,000 to 30,000 jobs in North America by 2012. Maybe that's what the Mayans were talking about. Plans to idle 14 manufacturing facilities and what it hopes will be a long-term turnaround for the number two automaker. The UAW is mad, saying that Ford screwed everything up, that they should have preserved their market share. The cuts represent 20 to 25% of Ford's North American workforce of 122,000 people. Ford is approximately 87,000 hourly workers, 35,000 salaried workers in the region. And again, I'm afraid it's just the beginning. Well, those of you who had the opportunity to listen to Art Bell's Hour last night and then the rest of his program with Michio Kaku heard probably one of the most courageous moments I've ever heard on radio. I got an email in from someone who said, George, last night's show with Art Bell was gripping, full of emotions. It left me speechless, moved beyond words. We were all listening to Art at his most vulnerable time in his life. And man, he poured out his feelings with so much compassion, so much emotion. Now I know why you call him the master. Last night, Art touched my soul in a way that not even I can find the words to explain how he moved me, but he did. I pray to God to take care of Art. He's our friend, and he is the master. And also, I want you to know that the weekend schedule starting this Saturday will dramatically change here for us on Coast to Coast. Art will do, if you haven't heard this, Saturdays and Sundays now, okay? He'll come back and do that. He wants to keep busy, and we're all for that. And then also starting this Saturday, a new role for, as I call him, our fullback, Ian Punnett. Ian will host a new early edition of Coast to Coast AM on Saturdays from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. Pacific time. Now, already, that show, which has been a refeed show, is on 200-plus stations around the country. We've got about 500 stations on our weekly schedule, so there's room for growth for this program. So those of you who want to get Ian's special Coast to Coast program on Saturdays, just call your favorite radio station and say, why don't you pick up this show? And that will begin really a new era in Coast to Coast. Now, in a moment, Jerry Corsi on Iran, and also what could be an incredible oil discovery in Canada when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry Corsi received a Ph.D. from Harvard University in political science and has written many books and articles. He's an expert on political violence and terrorism. In 1981, he received a top secret clearance from the Agency for International Development, where he assisted in providing anti-terrorism hostage survival training to embassy personnel. He's written several books, Atomic Iran, Black Gold Stranglehold. You may remember Jerry was just on a few weeks ago in his debate with Michael Rupert on Black Gold Stranglehold and on oil. Now we're going to talk with him a little bit about this Iranian situation and a situation also about some oil sands in Alberta, Canada. Jerry, welcome back at this short notice. Thank you.
George, always a great honor to be with you. Thank you.
Situation in Iran seems to be heating up. I'm a little concerned and confused why the United Nations and their Atomic Energy Commission isn't doing anything.
Well, that's been the pattern, George. As you know, we've covered this for months. And in fact, Atomic Iran, I wrote it 2 years ago, started into it. The world community does not seem to be able to know what to do to stop Iran. Iran has a radical regime that is a theocracy with this religious belief that it needs to expand its Islamic revolution worldwide. Ahmadinejad, the new president of Iran, actually has a messianic belief. He believes there's the second coming of the Mahdi, their lost imam from 941 AD, who went down a well and is coming back, they believe, with an apocalypse. Yeah, an apocalypse has to come. Then he's going to come back, and there'll be a new era of Islam spreading around the world. Now, as fantastic as that sounds, that's what Ahmadinejad believes. And it's very frightening because pursuing nuclear weapons could be the very, very vehicle Iran intends to use to create the apocalypse for the second coming of their Mahdi.
I also noticed on some Israeli websites this weekend, Jerry, that they were simply saying, we are not going to wait. We are preparing. This is really taking too long.
Well, that's right, George. Israel has said that by March, which is just really around the corner, by March of this year, Israel's patience is going to wear totally thin. Israel's really a one-bomb state, one nuclear weapon, even low yield, exploded over Tel Aviv, would destroy the modern Jewish state as we know it. Israel has sworn never again. After the Holocaust, and Ahmadinejad and Iran are denying the Holocaust happened. They said they want to wipe Israel off the map. So Israel has reason to feel in fear of their survival, and that's why Israel is preparing for a military strike against Iran if the diplomacy takes too long.
Last week, a tape surfaces from Osama bin Laden where he basically says, look, we're, you know, ready to go. We've had some operations. We've been planning something. And so that comes up. And then we have this upcoming exercise on a nuclear disaster in South Carolina. That's, you know, that's the second time. They did that last year, too, Jerry. I mean, is this all coincidental, which I never believe?
Well, you're right, George. It's not coincidental. The government has every reason to believe that as Iran approaches getting nuclear weapons, we're in fear of an improvised nuclear device being exploded in the United States. As I wrote in Atomic Iran, it could be shipped in the container. If Iran can make a nuclear weapon, they can solve most of the technical problems of getting a nuclear weapon to a terrorist group like Hezbollah or Al-Qaeda, which Iran has worked with before. These are real events going on right now, and nuclear terrorism is just around the corner. That's why the world has got to take serious concern that Iran, you know, which sits on 10% of the world's oil reserves, is about to extort the world with oil in their pursuit of nuclear weapons, with their religious goal to destroy Israel and destroy the United States, and I fear that this is coming quickly, and we have to take it very seriously.
I want to get your take on this. You know, I've interviewed Paul Williams before, and Paul believes that there are suitcase nukes distributed around this country. I'm not sure, but that's his take. However, I want to get your reaction to this. There's a professor at Harvard University, Graham Allison. He's a former Pentagon assistant secretary for plans and policy, and he says this, and this is pretty startling, Jerry. Tell me if you believe this. He says a month after 9/11, after those terrorist attacks, the Central Intelligence Agency presented George Bush with a report that Al-Qaeda had already smuggled a 10-kiloton nuclear bomb into New York City. And the president, according to the book, dispatched nuclear emergency support teams of scientists and engineers to search for the weapon, which they could never find. Is that a true story?
Yes, it is. Graham Allison wrote a book called Nuclear Terrorism. He's been worried about this. That alert did occur. If your listeners recall, many major cities all across the country were shut down, and there was a search made for those nuclear weapons. The risk is real, and it's imminent. And the terrorist organizations around the world have been searching for nuclear weapons for at least a decade. It's a ticking clock, George, and it's going to happen. The world has a short period of time in which to deal with the possibility of nuclear terrorism. It's around the corner with Iran reopening Natanz, beginning to enrich uranium. We've already seen oil hitting $69 a barrel again, and I fear it's going to get higher. All the truckers out there listening tonight, my heart goes out because I think we're right around the corner from seeing another spike in gasoline and diesel fuel prices, with Iran being happy to extort the world and punish the world in its pursuit for nuclear weapons, defying the world to do anything about it.
Another issue that cropped up last week is the French president, Chirac, saying that he would retaliate with nuclear weapons if France was attacked. There is a report that says that Chechens have apparently sold missile technology to Al-Qaeda and that their plans originally were to knock out planes in France or also the United States. So it just seems to me, Jerry, that something's going to happen. You can see the pieces of this ugly puzzle unfolding, and you can just sit back and watch it.
Well, that's right, George. I've been writing about it for years, and the intensity is building. We're getting, if a rogue state like Iran is this close to being able to enrich uranium, they bought the technology from AQ Khan in Pakistan. They know how to make the nuclear weapons. They have a Shahab 3 missile, which will easily hit Tel Aviv. I mean, take a look at pages 240 and 241 of the 9/11 Commission report. The muscle terrorists for the 9/11 attack came into the United States with Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda working together, and those muscle terrorists came into the United States through Iran. Iran is at the center of world terrorism, and it's pursuing nuclear weapons. It'll be happy to give that technology to Al-Qaeda, to Hezbollah, to Hamas, and to have it smuggled into the United States or into Europe, and to use it.
Very quickly, as the clock ticks here, apparently they have found some kind of oil in the sand of Alberta, Canada, which could be the second largest proven oil reserves in the world. Is this true?
Yes, it's true, George. As I wrote in Black Gold Stranglehold, the whole idea of peak oil or the oil is running out, we're not going to have it anymore, is a myth. In the oil mud up in Canada, which actually runs all the way through the continental United States, the Rocky Mountains are full of oil shale. The president of the company that was interviewed, even on 60 Minutes this past weekend, said there could be as many as 2 trillion barrels
of
oil.
Oh, my God.
2 trillion barrels. I mean, that's enough for maybe, you know, for we're looking now at not decades.
It's 100 years.
100 years, exactly. I mean, we'll have nuclear batteries running our cars before we run out of that oil.
We'll be flying in cars before we run out.
I mean, and that was serious because at $50 a barrel, let alone $70 a barrel, we can very economically go recover the oil mud and the oil shale that's all through the Rocky Mountains, all the way up virtually into the Yukon through Alberta and Canada. It's all there, it's all recoverable, and it's a huge resource, much vaster than anything in the Middle East.
Jerry, your website, which one do you recommend people go to?
Well, they can take a look. The best thing, George, is to take a look at Amazon.com. The two books, Atomic Iran and Black Gold Stranglehold. And it's a great honor to be with you, George, and thank you again for the opportunity to update your audience.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it. And, of course, I think, unfortunately, we're going to be talking about you about this Iranian situation sooner than later again.
I fear you're right, and please call any time.
You've got it. Jerry Corsi giving us updates on the situation in Iran and this incredible find in the sands of Alberta, Canada. which could very well be the world's second largest proven oil reserves, right under, second to Saudi Arabia. And there are neighbors. How about that? I'll be back in a moment. We'll have open lines. I'll also play for you an incredible EVP sound that I've just received right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's the Skeptic's Cage right around the corner. But when we come back, it'll be phone calls with you, open lines for the rest of this hour. January 23rd is the most depressing day of the year, according to one scientist in England. He's a psychologist. He says he's weighed the influence of a number of things that happened in January, and he said this is what happens. People get depressed about mounting debt, miserable weather, the length of time since Christmas, failed New Year's resolutions, a lack of motivation. He said simply keep fit and active is one of the keys to staying happy at this time of the year. So there you go on that little research study. A Japanese nurse who tried to relieve her work stress by tearing off patients' nails, sentenced to 3 years and 8 months in prison. 32-year-old Japanese woman. She worked at a hospital in Kyoto. She tore off the fingernails and toenails of 6 female patients. They were all immobile after strokes or other illnesses. She said that she needed to do that to relieve stress on her job. And a scientist in the United Kingdom has built a flying saucer. He has spent 5 years perfecting the craft in his lockup. He is now in talks with our American defense chiefs over the possible use in military reconnaissance. The craft could also be used in the examination of bridges, they say, in minefields. His flying saucer works by allowing a blast of air to be blown over its thin surface. It means that the electric-powered unmanned craft creates very little wind turbulence, is aerodynamically stable, and has no external rotor blades. When we come right back, we'll have open lines, and also I'm going to play for you one of the most incredible EVP sounds I have ever heard. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll have open lines for you this hour. Now, about a couple hours ago, I got an email from Willie, who sent me some EVP, a sound that I've never heard before. I'm going to get Willie on the line with us now, and he can kind of set the stage for us. Hi, Willie. Thanks for sending that to us.
Oh, that's no problem. I've been meaning to send it to you for a while now, and well, I haven't been able to get in contact with you guys.
Well, you found me. Now, tell me a little bit about what we're going to hear and how you were able to get this. Now, I believe it was, a friend of yours, right?
Yes, it's a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine now, but my sister introduced me to this couple. And what it is this lady is a teacher there. First of all, I work at Fort Bliss, okay?
Yeah.
And she's a teacher at Fort Bliss. She works with the elementary school there at Fort Bliss.
Because you could hear kids in the background.
Right, right. And what it was is that she was doing, her studies or something like that, and she was recording the kids at play. Okay, and then she had the cassette, right in front of her.
Sure.
And then she put it on, and she was monitoring, actually, because you know how kids like to, fumble the equipment and all that stuff. So she was making sure nobody got, around the stuff. But she was recording all the, the kids, just basically the kids at play and all that. Well, when the day was over, she took the tape home and she just, dropped it in and see what she recorded, see if she could get any highlights on the kids and all that stuff. It was some kind of project she was working on. And in one of the little tiny sections of the tape, this voice came out of nowhere, and she was just astonished and told her husband, and her husband told me about it. He asked me if I can, preserve it somehow, electronically and all that stuff. Now, mind you, this is about in 1994, 1995 era.
Oh, it's that old. Okay.
It's that old, uh-huh. And he not only did he tell me to preserve it and all that stuff, now he's the owner of the tape. He still has the tape. As far as I know, and he took it to one of the television stations over here, and they examined it, and they said, well, this is pretty authentic, this is nothing you know, nothing overimposed, nothing over, because, well, when you hear it, you can hear.
Yeah, it's one of the clearest ones I've heard.
Yeah, not only that, but you can still hear the kids in the background,
yes.
But the voice overpowers this.
Do we know, Willie, what happened at that location years ago? Are there any stories there?
Right now, they have no idea, but I'll tell you what, though, he said that that room where they recorded that recording, the teachers no longer teach there.
Oh, really?
It's abandoned. Ooh. Yes.
Okay.
Nobody wants to go
there. We're going
to
play this. I'll let you listen to it on the radio, Willie. Thank you for sending it to us. Now, this is an EVP taken at, as he was saying, an area at Fort Bliss, a little elementary area with kids. You're going to hear the kids in there, but then you're going to hear this incredible sound. Now, EVPs are always difficult to hear, but that was pretty clear. And, you know, it sounded like he was saying, my ears are exploding, and who knows what it was. Can we play that one more time, Dan? We're going to let you hear it one more time, then we'll go on with the rest of your calls. Just take a listen to this. Sounded like he said, kill me there. I wonder what Michael Shermer, the skeptic, would say if he heard that. Let's go to the phones west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome. Where are you?
Oh, I am in Oregon.
And you're also on the air.
Yes. Well, hello, George. That was wonderful to hear art yesterday, too. It was very poignant, definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
One thing I wanted to ask you is that would you consider inviting Dr. Katz? He's a veterinarian gentleman. He's a wonderful. He has this organization that's called In Defense of Animals. And he would be a wonderful host in memory of Ramona, who loved animals. That's somebody you may want to invite.
And his name is Dr. Katz?
Dr. Katz, and In Defense of Animals, I know.
Can you get me a little bit more information on where he is? And we'll just do some, I can't promise you, but we'll do some research into him, because we always do animal shows every once in a while, especially the psychic kind.
Yes.
But I'd be willing to look into that.
You should, because he would tell you about what's happening to animals right now and the torture they're being under. It's terrible. You wouldn't believe what's happening right now. You really need to talk to him about that. And they're doing a wonderful job about this. You know, I've been helping a lot, writing letters and calling. But if you want to reach him, the phone number...
No. Don't put his phone number out on the air. Everybody will call him. So make sure you just email it to me, okay?
That's the organization.
All right. Let me give you the email. george@coasttocoastam.com. Put all the information down there. You give out his phone number on this program, Dr. Katz will never get any sleep again. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hello, it's Jeff from St. Louis.
Hi, Jeff. Doing? What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. I have some comments about the Iran crisis.
All right. Give us your comments, Jeff.
All right. Well, for one, most recent military actions occurred during a new moon, if I remember right.
Oh, that's because it's easy to see.
There's a new moon at the end of the week.
It depends. It depends on what they do. If they have, there are two ways. If you want to send your troops in, you're supposed to go under a full moon. If you're merely going to send in missiles and rockets, you want to do it under a new moon where you can't see.
And there's a new moon at the end of the week.
Okay.
And also, there's the guy between Saddam and this guy, the president of Iran.
What do you mean there's a guy between?
No, I mean... I'm trying to compare the two. During the early invasion of Iraq, watching Saddam and Baghdad Bob, the guy who did all the press conferences.
Oh, that guy, yeah. You know, by the way, he was let go. He's around somewhere. I think he owns his own PR company now or something.
It wasn't scary watching it. It was more amusing.
It was almost comical watching that guy.
Watching what's going on in Iran. Not funny.
No, not funny at all. No, you're right. Every time that guy went on the air, and gosh, I think it was Jay Leno who pulled out some old clips and superimposed things, like he would say, "Things are fine. We're toppling you Americans," and you'd see Saddam's statue fall from behind him. It was hilarious. If you could laugh at war. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. This is Francine. I called you a couple weeks ago that we talked about this Iranian fanatic.
Yes.
Do you remember?
I sure do.
Okay, now this is my comment. This Ayatollah, he's almost like a Hitler type of thing here. Maybe he is the Antichrist, right?
Well, who knows?
Who knows? Here's how I would get rid of him. Okay, I worked for cancer specialists for years. When we found cancer, this is what we did. We cut it out, we used the chemical warfare, and then we radiated it, just in case any cells had escaped. So I think of the world as a human being, as a whole. You find a cancer, you cut it out, you use See, I'm so to the right, but you know what? For the best of the rest of the body, you get rid of the cancer no matter what it takes.
You know, a couple months ago, he escaped an assassination attempt.
Oh, you know what? I was saying, how could this guy? They knew he was coming. Oh, see, it's like cancer. Early detection, you have a better survival rate.
You know what's so strange about the United Nations, which is in New York? This guy came and spoke before the United Nations not too long ago. And it's weird that he's in our country, but he's not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange. Thanks, Francine. Appreciate you being on the program. First time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good.
I just want to let you know this is my first time ever call, first time really to ever listen. I've never really been a believer in anything, you know, besides ghosts.
Well, you will be after you listen a little bit longer on this program.
I will be, I think so, already. It happened on January 13th. Exactly at midnight. I was asleep and my wife was too. I just happened to wake up in the middle of the night. And when I looked at the end of my bed towards the end of my room, I just kind of saw this black, massy, floating, like, mass, you know, like a blob-looking thing. And I kind of was like, what the heck? Am I dreaming? So I looked at it a little longer. But I guess when I said, what the heck, I said it out loud and my wife woke up.
So you realized you weren't dreaming.
Yes. Because my wife woke up and saw the same thing and was like, get it away from me, get it away from me. And she put the covers over her head. And then that's when I flipped the light on and it was gone. And she saw what I saw, and she saw the black blob looking thing that was floating.
What do you think it was?
Well, I did research on the internet, and this show came up a lot. And the reference Shadow People came up.
And, yeah, it could have been. Now, since then, has anything happened to you or your wife? Everything okay?
And ever since then, everything's fine. I mean, I haven't been able to sleep too well, but, like, I haven't seen or heard or nothing really weird has been happening. That's the first thing that I ever had. But what scared me the most, I think, was, like, after it happened, my emotions were so messed up. Like, I was happy that I saw something because I always wanted to. But at the same time, like, I had tears in my eyes, and I couldn't stop it.
Oh, you must be on pins and needles now.
Well, not really. It's just that one time, I've never felt my emotions be that messed up. And it just kind of worried me for a while. Like, is that a bad thing? Have other people experienced that? I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, especially when it happens like that for the first time, because it's difficult to explain exactly what it is and what you experienced. And people go through all kinds of emotions. It is not unusual at all. At all. You'll be fine. You'll get through that one. Thanks for the call. Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Hello, my name's Alan Howard.
Hello, Alan.
And I'm calling from Spokane, Washington. Are you there?
I am. I'm waiting for you, Alan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. And, I got my curiosity up with that tape that was played. I was out with a gentleman shooting photographs, and I shoot lots and lots and lots of digital pictures now.
Okay.
Everywhere. And I was out by this river in Spokane, and I was shooting pictures into a grove of trees. And when I got home and I was looking at these on the computer, there was a figure in the trees. And so I pulled this up as far as I could, you know, and it's actually a person. and it's all white, and you can see the eyes, and you can see the kind of a widow's peak on the hair.
Have we seen this picture? You haven't sent this one to us, have you? All right.
And here's the kicker. This thing is I didn't know I had it. So my wife and I, we were looking at it, and we went back there to see what this was because it was in the tree.
Yeah.
And we went back there, and I took a bunch more pictures there, and we went and looked at it. It was a transformer. Yes.
That looked like a person in a tree?
Well, the next day when I took the pictures from the same place and everything, it was just the transformer. But the day before when I took the picture, the transformer was an actual, it was looking at us.
Same spot, same everything.
Same spot. I took several pictures, and it was just a transformer. And the first picture I have, there's a face, there's hair, there's an arm, there's it looks like it's in a dress.
It's shape-shifting on you. Well, whatever it is.
And you know what? The second when I went back to with my wife, I got incredible chills. It's by this old cabin, you know. And there's a few people that live.
I'd like to see these pictures, the transformer picture and the other one. If you can email it to me,
I sure can. I need to know who I'm emailing to. And
George,
because I was just listening to the radio and decided to call you.
Great. Here, it's very simple. George at coast2coastam.com. coast2coastam.com. Just get it right out to us. Both of them. I want to see the comparison, too.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. You know, I'll do that right now.
All right, and I'll get it to Lex, and if Lex likes it, we'll get it posted in the next day or two. Thank you so much. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I had a comment about this suitcase nuclear nuke.
Yeah.
Kind of scaring the stuffings out of everyone, and there's a book by Richard Minotaur called Disinformation.
Yes.
Really,
matter of fact, I just made reference to that on Friday night.
The scare in its current form started with a Russian general, Ledbetter, who told a U.S. congressional delegation visiting Moscow, and he was later on 60 Minutes, that there was a bunch of these things missing.
You are right.
But nearly everything he told them has been contradicted, sometimes by...
See, I've always thought if they have them, they're going to use them. They're not going to sit
there's
back.
There's more problems. They have to be maintained. They have to be recharged.
That's true.
Every couple months.
That's true.
And they're also, it's not a suitcase. It's more like 3 footlockers. You can't just carry them around. What they're talking about, the units that are portable, were mine.
However, I would not put it past the terrorist to try to get something like that into the country.
Well, the problem is they were carefully monitored. We actually made them before the Russians. And the Russians had taken care of these. They were not, there's none missing. They were all accounted for and they were all dismantled. I'm talking about the suitcase. They were actually mines. They weren't.
See, but I think our biggest problem are shoulder-fired missiles that they could hit planes with.
Exactly. But the word suitcase nuke is such a big, scare. You know, everyone throws it around. Everyone's using it. I heard Stan Dale using it the other night, and it's just like, it's almost people are using this to sell books, just to scare people, and it's misinformation, pure and simple.
Do you think it's all scare tactics, or do you think there's some reality?
Well, the suitcase nukes, the term suitcase nukes is a scare tactic. It's not real, and if you were to look up the information, it's there for anyone to look at. This information has been refuted. It's been straightened out. It was all hyperbole, and it's not true. It was just something that this Russian general, I guess he was trying to get his name in the headlines.
Well, and he did.
Motivation was for doing this, but it worked.
Yeah, he got his name in the headlines. Okay, thanks. I appreciate your perspective. As a matter of fact, when we come back, we're going to have different perspectives because the skeptic's cage is about ready to begin, where two will go in, one will come out. We've got Dr. Michael Shermer. And those of you the few of you who sent me an email saying we were ganging up on Michael, no, he's all excited to do this. So it's Michael Shermer, the skeptic, against 3 separate people, one at a time. Let's just hope Michael doesn't get knocked out in the first round. Then what do I do for the rest of the show? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.